You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Hello, alluring allegiance of allies, allowing alliterations about alligators. Welcome to Good Job Brain, your weekly quiz show and offbeat trivia podcast. This is episode 59, and of course, I am your humble host, Karen, and we are your triad of trivia tricksters who treasure Triceratops and Triskaidekaphobia.
I'm Colin.
I'm Dana.
And no Chris, hence I said triad. Chris is on vacation in Japan, so hopefully... Oh,
does Chris like Japan?
Oh, huh. I think so.
Okay. Yeah, I wasn't aware of that.
We miss him dearly, and we can't wait until he comes back. And without further ado, let's jump into our first general trivia segment, Pop Quiz Hotshot. And here I have a random Trivial Pursuit card, and you guys have your barnyard buzzers, and let's do this. Let's answer some questions.
Yeah.
All right.
Here we go. Blue Wedge for geography. What country are you in if you're called an April Gawk after falling for an April Fool's Day joke? And that's spelled G-O-W-K.
An April Gawk. April Gawk. Huh. I'll guess Australia?
Incorrect.
Okay. New Zealand?
Incorrect. It is Scotland.
April Gawk.
Okay. April Gawk. All right. Pink Wedge for pop culture. What Gilligan's Island character also goes by the name Jonas Grumby?
That is the Skipper.
Skipper.
Yes. I think it's only mentioned in the pilot or the very first episode.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
They do mention it, yeah.
And Yellow Wedge, here we go. What cable TV show follows the exploits of Henry VIII?
The Tudors?
Yes, yeah. The Tudors. Pretty steamy. Purple Wedge. What author coined the dollar baby deal, letting student filmmakers adapt his short stories for $1?
Stephen King.
Correct. Stephen King. Which is actually a really smart business
model.
That is.
I didn't know that. That's pretty clever.
A really nice thing to do, too.
Yeah. For $1.
Huh.
All right. Green Wedge for science. What aquatic animal can literally spill its guts when frightened? Oh my god, your eyes.
I'm like, its liver and lungs come out. Man. Animal. Sea turtle. I'm just kidding.
Is it a squid? Is it a squid or octopus?
Incorrect.
Hmm.
It is actually a sea cucumber.
Oh. Ew.
Oh.
Ew. Ew.
The purpose of the purge is a mystery, but the organs do not regenerate.
Huh.
Yeah.
What? They just kill themselves?
Do they die?
It's like a one-time last-ditch effort.
To what end?
To what end? To what end?
All right. Orange Wedge. Last question. Oh, God, this is good. A silhouette of what player is pictured in the NBA logo?
Oh.
I thought it was just a generic dude.
Oh, no. This is a great one. Yes. That is, of course, Jerry West.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yes.
Nice. Yes. He was just an iconic player at the time they came up with the logo.
I wonder if they paid him.
I don't think they did. I don't think that he got paid. I don't think it was enough of an honor to be the logo. In fact, one of his nicknames is the logo, even.
Really?
Now. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
and it's,
that's
you know,
cool.
it's well known among the players, yeah, that he is the basis for the logo.
I thought it was just a normal dude. Dude. Now I'm curious about all the other sport logos, like if they're based on real players too.
I think they're all meant to be generic, actually.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, that's the only one that's based on a recognizable or known to be based on a recognizable person.
Oh, cool. All right, good job, brains. So I first want to say that I want to dedicate this episode to a special someone, more like someone. In addition to the intense and emotional roller coaster of events in Boston this past week, something else happened that I thought deserved a little bit of TLC from us. Good job, Brain. In the Connecticut town of Shelton, there's a library, the Huntington Branch Library, and they had a resident pet slash mascot snake, a corn snake, and her name is Peaches. It's very cute. And Peaches is a local celebrity and a hit with all the kids who come to the library. And she's been living in her tank at the library for like 8 years. So a few weeks ago, some anonymous jerkface one night intentionally poured heavy-duty cleaning solvent onto Peaches and into her tank. And sadly, Peaches the snake died. And not only is the library staff like saddened by this loss, but a lot of the kids are just heartbroken because
I'm
of
saddened
their
by
people.
This. I
know.
Just that's terrible.
It's so sad. But it sounds like Peaches had a great life at the library, and you know she was surrounded by people who loved her every day. And we actually sent the library a condolence card for Peaches. And if you like to, too, I'll put up the library's address in the blog post on the website, so maybe you can send something nice to honor Peaches.
Aww.
And in memory of Peaches, we thought it'd be fun to do an episode on the slithering and swarming and slimy, wonderful creatures of our world. So this week, we're talking about creepy crawlies.
Okay, well, this is, I would say, a less heartwarming story about a slimy or slithery creature in the news. In Florida, they've had an outbreak of giant African snails.
Oh, I saw that in the news. They're huge. Well,
oh,
I mean,
yeah.
Huge as in...
By like, snail standards.
Yeah. It's like you can hold in your hand.
They can get up to around 8.5 inches long. They're call them rat-sized. I saw a video of someone giving one a bath. And I was thinking,
why would you give
a snail a bath?
Because you can. It looked like it was...
This sounds like the first half of a Laffy Taffy joke. Why did you give a snail a bath?
Oh, what's the answer?
I don't know. Dana, you're the best at these. Yeah.
Just feeling sluggish.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Oh! Yeah. I saw this news story on CNN posed in a very formal matter about like, oh, the snail invasion. And of course, the first comment that this news story got, I thought it was like a serious comment at first. And he said, I heard these snails are even big enough to drive a car. One particularly fast vehicle was festooned with the letter S. All the police could say was, look at that S car go. And I lost it.
No.
I know it's an old joke.
Yeah, womp womp.
S car go.
But it's on CNN.
Bravo.
Good job. Yeah. So I don't think they can drive a car, but they can eat houses. They eat stucco. They're eating the stucco. They're looking for calcium to make their shells bigger. It helps them get bigger.
Oh my God.
They can eat like little bones and rocks. And so they're a big problem.
So did they, how did they get here? Did they just get here somehow? Or are they an invasive species?
They're an invasive species. They're actually all over the world. There's outbreaks of these snails all over the world in kind of tropical or humid climates. There was an outbreak of African snails in Florida in 1966 that they were able to eradicate. And those came when a little boy went to Hawaii and came back with snails in his pocket as pets. And his grandmother released them into the backyard. And they had a really big problem. It took them about 10 years to get rid of them in Florida. It cost $1 million in 1960s money.
That one boy.
There was been an outbreak in Bangalore, India, where the university was using the snails for some scientific research, and then people let them go for compassionate reasons, and they've overrun the forest outside of Bangalore. And into like the more inhabited areas, it would be a really big problem because they eat a lot of things. And Barbados is overrun with them. Their shells are all over the highway. They can puncture tires.
And I don't like snails.
Are they faster? Does their speed scale up?
No. So the thing with these snails is apparently they are adorable. Like they're so big and they have cute little faces. Like the person giving it a bath, it kind of was cute in the water. And I think it uses its trickery to get its good looks. These things are hermaphroditic, so they have both male and female reproductive organs. And so in a small colony, they can impregnate themselves. They don't need other snails
Times are tough.
Yeah.
You do what you gotta do.
They can live up to 10 years. Every time they lay a sack of eggs, it could have up to 1,200 eggs.
I'm just imagining like opening, like you go out the front door and there's just a swarm of 10-inch long snails
moving really slowly.
Slow, slimy, shelled wave.
Oh.
And then one more thing I found out about these snails. In World War II, the American military actually imported them to the South Pacific Islands and to use them as an emergency food source for soldiers. I mean, they're huge. And,
probably high in protein,
yeah,
I guess.
They eat a lot of things. You don't really need to worry about
that.
They're
easy to catch. Well, you don't expend a lot of energy hunting them down.
Yeah. No, they escaped. The snails escaped and got loose on the island. They were starting to really interfere with the flora on the island. And so they were like, okay, we will import these carnivorous Floridian snails. There's snails from Florida, ironically, that eat other snails. And so they imported them to the island. And instead of attacking the giant snails, they attacked all the local snails on that island and almost made all the snails become extinct.
Oh my God. That's like short-term solution.
Right. They also hadn't perfected the targeted snail attack.
And they're dangerous too, because these giant African land snails, they have rat lung disease, which causes meningitis or
and
something.
Humans.
Yeah.
Nobody in the U.S. has gotten it yet, but yeah, the snails are cute. So you could get it from handling them. There's a low probability.
There's zero probability that I'm going to handle them, Dana. I'm not worried about that. I can guarantee that.
People do eat the snails. People do use the snails for food in different parts of the world, and that's, you can definitely get meningitis if you ate it, an infected snail. You can get salmonella from handling them.
Oh my God.
Noted.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Well, so I actually did research on another type of invasive species. And you may recall, we kind of talked about this in our Plants Are Weird episode. Colony talked about the Kogun grass.
Oh, yeah. Bloodgrass.
Bloodgrass, which I lovingly call it the a-hole grass, is an example of invasive species. And it's pretty scary. Plants and animals, you know, like Dana said, that kind of just take over and breed and grow nonstop to a point where it becomes dangerous or a huge threat to the local ecology. They kill off plants. They kill off other animals. So I want to introduce to you another specific invasive species called the cane toad. And like the snail, it's pretty cute too. It's like the classic toad, like what you think of toad in your head.
Okay.
It's like brown and it's stocky and, you know,
kind
it's a land toad.
Yeah.
Yeah, but adorable in a weird way. And it's native to Central and South America. And they are prolific eaters and prolific breeders. And they're actually quite useful to some countries and cultures because they can be used as agricultural pest controls because they eat a lot of bugs or pests.
Sure, sure.
Here's problem number one. Many people thought, oh, rad. Hey, this toad is so effective against crops. We should bring them over to our territory and have the toad eat our pests. And cane toads were introduced to a lot of island nations, Puerto Rico, also to Florida, even to Australia, as a way to protect crops, specifically sugarcane crops. Hence cane toads, because they would eat cane beetles that would infect sugarcane crops. But not all of these pest control experiment introductions were successful. It failed in Australia because the beetles, they're pretty smart. They actually hang out high up on the sugar cane. And these toads are like sucky climbers. And so the toads didn't really contribute at all to the actual pest control. And so you just have a bunch of kind of useless foreign toads hanging out, eating and having sex and breeding in Australia, just chilling.
Layabout toads.
Not earning their keep at all.
No, not at all. And here's problem number two. Cane toads are poisonous. What? Their skin is toxic and they have several glands that would secrete poison when they're threatened.
Sure.
Uh-huh. And they are killing off other animals in the area.
When they eat them or when they try to eat them.
Yeah, when the other animals eat them or are in contact and they get sprayed or ingest the poison. And these animals are now dying off. And this is a huge problem in Australia. And the toads just keep churning out more poison babies. And scientists and ecologists in Australia were scrounging for solutions, and which all led to this bizarre headline. Sausage solution to Australia's cane toad invasion.
Uh-oh.
So the scientists in Australia, instead of focusing on destroying the toads, they're focused on training the other animals not to eat the cane toads. So what they did was they would blend up cane toad meat without the toxin, just the meat. Uh-huh. Lace it with like a mild nausea-inducing compound, and they would extrude the mixture and make sausages. Like they actually use just a normal sausage machine.
To sort of what train them against, to wean them off the taste of toad meat.
Yep. So that
sweet toad meat.
They would scatter these sausages like out in the wild And animals who smell the toad meat will then eat the sausage. They'll throw up or get sick and quickly train right. themselves thinking, right. you know what? I'm going to stay away from toad meat.
Yep.
Obviously, the sausage solution is not very scalable. You know, I mean, this works for a maybe a smaller region, but you can't do it for like whole countries or whatever. And one of the researchers said, it would be impossible to put baits out right across the country. I can tell from blending up dead toads in a sausage maker, it's a lot of work. Oh.
I can picture that.
Like, what is my life?
What is my job? What am I doing?
Yeah. I got a PhD for this.
I'm a ranger, but here I am. Like,
sitting in front of a sausage maker. Yeah. So there you go. A very creative way, I would say, to try to stop the cane toad. Right, invasion. Right. Very, very creative, but very, very strange.
I am sure that we have more than one listener out there right now wondering, I wonder what cane toad sausage tastes like.
Oh, chicken. Like a chicken apple sausage.
Well, I've got a segment here for you guys that I have entitled, What's That Buzzing Sound? Okay. And this segment is about one of my personal just creepy crawly nightmares, which is bugs in your ears.
Oh!
Like just as a kid, I don't know if it's rational or irrational, but I just like that was the thing that just always sent shivers down my spine more than anything. A snake, spiders, whatever. Okay. Just the idea of a bug getting inside my ear and flitting around. It just it just makes me squirm right now even talking about it.
Or just like when you hear mosquito, you're like, ah,
yeah.
Well, hear about people with cockroaches in their ears.
Yes.
Yeah.
Once I came to the hostel and I looked on my pillow and there's a worm on the pillow. I couldn't go to sleep that night.
Let's get some of the urban legends around this out of the way first. Lee, we've heard these stories of bugs, whatever type, crawling and eating people's brains or laying eggs inside their head. All right, none of those are true.
What?
Like bugs, they don't crawl in. They're not going to crawl in and eat your brain. Bugs do not crawl in and lay eggs inside your skull.
My brain is so delicious.
But my brain's so tasty. Yeah. These are not true.
Good.
Now, what is true is that bugs will crawl inside your ears sometimes. And Dana, as you said, there have been stories in the news of kids waking up with a cockroach that had crawled inside their ear over the night. Or, it just drives me crazy thinking about
recently, it. Recently, I remember, not recently, but maybe last year, some woman in China had a spider crawl into her ear.
Sure.
And it got stuck.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. They get stuck in
this
there.
This does. They do. They crawl in more often than not. When you hear about it, it's because they got stuck in there. They're not doing it to attack your brain. They're not doing it to lay eggs. They're doing it because they're just dumb bugs, really. Like, the entomologists, they really say, like, the reason that a bug would crawl inside your ear is it's just looking for warmth. Maybe looking for moisture, and it just gets stuck. It gets in there. It's like, okay, well, maybe it's nice and warm for a while. When it comes time to leave, they can't always find their way out. A lot of twists and turns inside there. We've all seen that cutaway view. So
David Bowie in my ear.
So I got some great anecdotes here, historical anecdotes of bugs in people's ears this is my way of facing my fear. Okay,
like
I'm confronting it, you know, head on or ear on at least. Right, right. Sure. One of the first stories I heard about this, I remember this was a long time ago, was, David Letterman. He, you know, he's notorious, actually, being a speeder. He loves to drive fast. One of the stories when he was pulled over speeding, this was years ago, he was driving late at night, cop pulls him over, pulls down the window, may or may not recognize him right away, but ultimately it's Mr. Letterman, what's going on? And he's like, officer, I'm sorry, I've got a moth stuck in my ear.
Oh.
And what had happened was he was at home and moth flying around his head, and it either flew in there just being a dumb moth, or he may have knocked it inside his ear. But it got in the ear and crawled a little bit further in. And then you can hear the moth flying around in there, flapping around. And if you can imagine, you can't get it out yourself. So he gets in the car and speeds off to the hospital.
That's Karen's fear bug.
Yeah.
She's red.
I had the advantage of preparing this segment. But
it's the flapping. Gross.
Yeah, it is. It is. This was just a couple years ago. There's a player for the St. Louis Cardinals, a baseball player named Matt Holliday. There's footage of this because it happened during a game. He was out in the outfield. And a moth flew in his ear while he's just out in the field. And the footage, you sort of see him at first, like, kind of like, what's going on, you know? And then he has to come out of the game. I mean, he has to come out of the game eventually. They take him into the trainer's room. And, like, if this happened to you, what would be the first thing that you would try to get a moth out of your ear?
Tweezers?
You know, that seems like the first thing I would try too, is just reach in there and pull it out with tweezers. They darkened the room and held a light up next to
his
ear.
That's pretty smart.
I don't know.
That's pretty smart.
It's either really smart or really naive, but suffice it to say, it didn't work.
But he's stuck.
Yeah, right. It's stuck. Lure him out with food? No, light. No. Light. The light didn't work. They had to reach in with a...
It'd be funny if they set his head on fire. Yeah. like a match. Closer.
they had to pull it out with a pair of tweezers. Yeah. So he's fine now.
I will pee in my pants and I will faint if that happens.
You're like, just knock me out.
This
tell
is
me
why,
when it's out.
Everybody, you should listen to podcasts and music at all times and have earphones in your ears to prevent this. This is our mission. Good job, Ray Mission. Listen to our podcast.
It's a public health issue.
And therefore, moths will not fly into your ear.
They lost that game, by the way, unfortunately.
Well,
yeah.
It was a little distracting,
it was unfortunate. Yeah. So, but this anecdote of, what's that buzzing sound? I think this one just tops them all. And this one, there's so many steps at which this story becomes cringeworthy. I want to talk to you about a man named John Hanning Speke, S-P-E-K-E. And he was a British explorer, did a lot of exploring around Africa. In the 1800s, mainly. One of the things that he was really keen on finding was the source of the Nile. And so on one of his expedition trips in Africa, he's out camping one night and notices just tons of these little beetles all over his tent.
Crawling,
driving him crazy. Right. You know, tiny little beetles. One of the beetles ended up crawling inside his ear, flitting around and driving him just bananas. And he's like, I gotta get this beetle out of my ear, which would probably be my reaction too. He kind of panicked a little bit. Now, you know, we said, like, the first thing I might try is maybe some tweezers, maybe get someone else to look in there.
Oh, you know what? Before you continue your story, other than tweezers, the thing is it's alive and it's moving. So I don't want to tweeze that because maybe they'll pull away or whatever.
Mm.
I think what I would do, and this is, I'm not a first aid expert. I would put water in my ear to hope to drown the bug. And then have a flow out.
That's actually not a bad idea. And that is what some people have tried in cases. Like, people tried, like, mineral oils or water to try and get it out. Yeah. He, for whatever reason...
Oh, no.
He thought melted butter might be the best thing to pour in there. I guess maybe it was the only oil he had access to. So he poured some melted butter in his ear. Did not get the beetle out. So then he started jabbing at it, basically.
Oh.
He had, like, a little pocket knife.
No.
So he's trying to poke at it
and
dig it out and or kill it. So he eventually kills the beetle inside his ear. And as you say, Karen, the problem is like, oh, wait, now it's dead. Now this thing isn't going to help me come out at all. So he's got a dead beetle inside his ear.
And butter.
Right, and butter. And he, you know, is stabbing. So it got infected. Things turned really bad for him from here. It got infected and started swelling up on the inside of his head. His face got distorted. He had boils. It made him nearly deaf for like several months because of just the pressure, you know, on his ear passages in there. He couldn't hear, it was driving him crazy. It actually, the infection, this gets really gross, guys, I'm sorry. The infection ate a hole between his ear and his nose because, you know, they are sort of connected back there. And it led to this horrifying / hilarious anecdote from his journals that I will read to you here.
Okay.
So this is quoting from his journals talking about the infection or the tumor as he refers to it. For many months, the tumor made me almost deaf and ate a hole between the ear and the nose, so that when I blew it, my ear whistled so audibly that those who heard it laugh.
Oh.
6 or 7 months after this accident happened, bits of the beetle, a leg, a wing, or parts of the body, came away in the wax. So it did find its way out eventually, but that is absolutely the most horrifying, that is my nightmare town scenario, is a bug crawling in there and it dying in there.
I looked it up, so what are you supposed to do if this happened? But here the right steps.
Sure.
So first, you lie down on a flat surface with the bug-infested ear facing up.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so that you're comfortable.
Right.
The next step is to drape the patient with several white or light-colored absorbent towels. The light color of the draping will make spotting the insect much easier after the removal process.
Mm.
Then you slowly fill the ear with baby oil, mineral oil, or vegetable oil, or even olive oil. And this will kill the insect, causing it to stop moving. And then what happens is then you just keep flushing your ear with tepid water to try to, like, flush the bug out. Wow.
I'm curious if nobody wanted to help that guy. I guess not, because they laugh when it, like, whistles. All
right, I'm going to go lie down now.
Get my heart rate back to normal.
All right, this is a good time. We're going to take a break and a word from our sponsor.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pile-ups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
Everybody, shush! William Shatner has something to say.
Cat and Jethro, box of oddities.
What do you do when the woman you love dies? Well, of course, you dig her up and you live with her.
Aww.
The show examines weird things.
There are plenty of old photographs from this time period of children out in the streets playing in and among the dead horse carcasses.
Oh, I miss those days. Things used to be so much simpler.
Cat and Jethro.
Then there's the urine wheel, which sounds like a really bad game show.
They've done weird things. Cat and Jethro, box of oddities. That is really mysterious.
Join Cat and Jethro Gilligan Toth for the strange, the bizarre, the unexpected, as they lift the lid and cautiously peer inside the box of oddities.
The Webby Award-winning Box of Oddities podcast from Airwave Media.
And welcome back. You're listening to Good Job Brain. And this week we're talking about creepy crawlies.
You're so very special. I'll have that special. But I'm a creep. I'm a weirdo. What the heck am I doing here? I don't belong here. I'm a creep. I'm a nut job.
So this is not necessarily crawly, but it's definitely creepy.
Okay.
I have a quiz for you guys. It's about Stephen King, the master of horror.
Whoa.
He wrote 56 novels, 5 books, 13 collections, 2 comics, a script. He's influenced a lot of horror and sci-fi writers.
Super creepy.
Nice. So for this quiz, I'm going to see how well you guys know his body of work. So I will give you some clues about the novel that I'm talking about or the story that I'm talking about. All and right. I'll start really general, kind of obscure, and then I'll get more specific. And
as you guys, we go along?
As we go along.
Got it.
And so a special rule I want to try is you can buzz in and answer, but you can't answer 2 times in a row. So you have to wait till the other person tries.
Oh, okay. We'll take turns.
Yeah.
Okay. But we can buzz in as soon as we think we know the answer.
Yes.
All right.
Okay.
Okay.
Number one. This was Stephen King's first published novel. One of the... Colin.
Oh, was it Carrie?
Yes.
Oh! What are the other clues?
It was one of the most frequently banned books in U.S. schools.
Huh.
There's a new theatrical adaptation coming out this year.
Oh, yeah, with Chloe Moretz and Julianne Moore.
Yeah.
Mm.
And it tells the story of a high school girl with telekinetic powers who uses them to exact revenge on the people who tease her.
That was his first published book.
I know. Man, it set the bar high.
I know.
This was Stephen King's second novel. It was originally titled Second Coming. It's about a town where all the residents become vampires.
Oh, this is The Dead Zone?
No. And the name is a shorter version of Jerusalem's Lot. Karen?
No, it's not. I was going to say Pet Cemetery, which is not.
You're going to be so mad.
What?
Salem's Lot.
Oh!
I didn't know that Salem's Lot was short for Jerusalem's
Lot. I did not know that.
Oh, Jerusalem, Salem.
I don't think I ever noticed that.
All right. The title for this novel was inspired by John Lennon's song Instant Karma. It was adapted into a TV miniseries in 1997.
Is that it?
No.
Keep going.
Before that, it was a movie directed by Stanley Kubrick. Inspired by a stay at Colorado's Stanley Hotel during the off-season. Karen?
Is this the wish dream taker?
No.
No.
Okay.
No. It's The Shining. I didn't know it took its name as an inspiration, or that was inspired by John Lennon's song.
Yeah, there's a line in there about shining on.
Yeah, well, I'll shine on. Interesting. Yeah. That's a good one.
Mm.
All right. This novel was published in 1981. The name of the novel is based on the nom de guerre of Willie Wolfe, one of the men responsible for orchestrating the kidnap of Patty Hearst. A bat bites the main character on the nose.
Yeah, I thought so. I was going to buzz in one question earlier. That's Cujo.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, isn't Cujo about the dog?
Yeah. Yeah. You know what kind of dog?
Is it a Mastiff?
No, I think he's a Rottweiler? Saint Bernard.
Saint Bernard,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
This novel was adapted into a movie the same year it was released as a novel. Karen.
The Green Mile.
This is not the one I'm thinking of. It's possible.
Is it Misery?
Nope.
It was after it was a big name.
Karen.
Christine.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
The killer car, right?
The killer car.
Good job.
Killer car.
Huh.
The titular character is not usually an animate object. The titular character is a 1958 Plymouth Fury.
Oh, a Plymouth Fury?
Yeah.
Oh, clever.
All right, last one. Stephen King actually put away this novel, and he didn't want to release it, but he submitted it to Doubleday when he needed another novel for his contract.
Oh.
It must be. So it must be a big hit.
One of the words in the title is misspelled. On purpose, but it's a misspelled word.
Oh, is that Pet Cemetery?
Yes, it's Pet Cemetery. Good job, you guys.
That was good.
Oh, master of the creep. Do you guys know what spontaneous generation is?
I don't know. Is that like when you cut a worm in half and both halves grow back?
Close, kind of. It's a theory. According to this theory, living things come forth from non-living things.
Okay.
It's a very old school way of thinking.
Like maggots come from meat.
Right.
This even dates back to like the Greek philosophers. Aristotle talked about it a lot. And the theory is that, you know, there are different elements in the world. There's air, there's water, and through different combinations of that, life can be generated. It's funny to sit here and be like, wow, they're really dumb. Like, but this is like centuries and centuries of people without the right technology tools to find out about cells.
They were putting forth a theory, mm-hmm. and their observations held up that theory as mm-hmm. best as they could.
Yeah. And it's not that bad.
Except, would you ever want to eat meat if you really thought that it could become flies with air?
From the days of Aristotle, you know, spontaneous generation is discussed as a fact in literature well into the Renaissance. Even Shakespeare, he discusses snakes and crocodiles and other creepy crawlies forming from the mud.
Mm.
And it kind of made sense because the observation is, oh, well, all these crocodiles are living in the river, hanging out in the mud. They must therefore come from mud. In 1668, Italian physician Francesco Redi disproved the theory of spontaneous generation. And what he did was pretty basic. Popular claim or the popular example is, yes, there's meat and maggots come out from the meat. And so what he did was he had samples of rotting meat that some were fully exposed to the air, mm-hmm. Some were partially exposed, and some of the meat was not exposed to air at all, like in a container of some sort. Obviously, the meat that was exposed to air had maggots and flies, and the meat that was enclosed did not. This discovery completely changed the way people viewed decomposition of organisms. He didn't know it at the time, but Francesco Redi really is kind of the founding father of what we call forensic entomology. And forensic entomology is application and study of insects and other bugs and arthropods to criminal and legal matters, thanks to his maggot meat experiment. And now it is a scientific way for experts to determine the time of death
We've seen it on the TV cop shows, you know. It's like, well, based on the level of maggots and decomposition, time of death was 18 hours ago or whatever.
And the concept of forensic entomology kind of dates back a while ago, but it was within the last 30 years that it has become a certified kind of a system to explore feasible sources for evidence in investigations and whatnot, just from bugs. Here's another way that bugs help criminal matters. There's a certain type of beetle, and they're flesh-eating beetles. Forensic labs would use these bugs to help them clean skeletons.
Oh, yeah, right. I've heard about this.
On Bones.
On Bones.
I've seen it on the TV show Bones.
Oh, really?
And it happens on Bones. But
you release these beetles, and they can eat all the meat, all the hide, all the skin, and leave a pristine skeleton. And this is actually really helpful because the other way, the old way is they would use a lot of harsh chemicals.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that might deteriorate the surface of the bone.
Well, these beetles are getting the job done, unlike those lazy ass cane toads.
The Natural History Museum in London, a while ago, they had a flesh-eating bug cam.
Uh-huh.
And you can see the bugs. But the thing is, you have to keep them enclosed because if
Eat flesh.
Yes, they eat flesh. They eat organic material. They're also known as bow bugs because it's a problem for violinists because they like to eat the bow because it's made out of horsehair. And so they would infest.
And it would just degrade and snap. Mm-hmm.
Eat all those strings.
There you go. But, you know, it's cool. Creepy Crawly's actually helping out, unlike the cane toads. Man, this episode has been like an emotional roller coaster.
When I was laying in bed this morning thinking about the show, I'm like, oh, we're going to be talking about some creepy, dark stuff.
Are you looking for a podcast that your whole family can enjoy that asks the deep philosophical questions like, do trees fart?
If you are, then you'll love Tumble, a science podcast for kids. I'm Lindsay.
And I'm Marshall. Join us as we explore stories of science discovery, from butts to animals, dinosaurs, astronomy, and everything in between.
You'll love these stories, and you'll learn something new.
Find and follow Tumble Science Podcast for Kids wherever you get your podcasts, or at sciencepodcastforkids.com.
And Colin, you have a last trivia bit for us.
I do. And again,
bring it home.
Yeah, I'm just now noticing a theme among my segments, which is like invading my body. You know
what
I mean?
That's your fear.
Like,
that's your core fear.
It really is. I mean, maybe it's why, Alien and Aliens movies are just so visceral for me. Yeah. You guys, have you heard of dracunculiasis? Is its scientific name. It is also known as the guinea worm.
Are they drunk?
Like dracunculiasis. They are parasites. They're
redonkulous and drunk.
It is fun to
say. You're drunkoculous.
Yeah.
Drunkoculiasis. Yeah.
These are one of a family of parasitic worms, nematodes, that invade your body and have most of their life cycle inside your body. And yeah, just gird yourself now. Gird yourself now.
I'm so grossed out by the whole idea of parasites in your body, but I'm also so interested in it.
Yeah, it's almost what it is, you can't look away, but I need to know more about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a little bit higher profile recently. Jimmy Carter, the Carter Center, one of their big causes is working to try and wipe out the guinea worm. And so he's been, you know, making the rounds recently, giving a lot of interviews about it. So it's called the guinea worm. It was named basically when they started seeing it along the Guinea coast in Africa.
Okay.
So
nothing to do with guinea pigs.
Nothing to do with guinea pigs, yeah. It is shrinking in its area now, thanks to Jimmy Carter and other people like him. The dracunculiasis, it's Latin for affliction with little dragons.
Whoa. Yeah. That's kind of beautiful.
It is beautiful and yet really frightening. It's supposed to be one of the most painful parasites to deal with. So let me just walk you through the life cycle.
Game of Thrones thing.
It really does. In fact, you know, that's a really good way of putting it. This sounds like a torture from Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
So here's the life cycle with a human. It starts off if you drink in contaminated water. And what's in the water are little tiny water fleas. And the water fleas, they themselves are infected with the larva for the guinea worm.
Okay.
So you drink the contaminated water, the water fleas go into your gut, your system, they die. When they die, the larvae come out of the fleas and they begin the larval life cycle inside you. Mm-hmm. This cycle takes up to a year. The worm that grows, the fertilized female worm, travels inside your body down your leg. This is Nightmare Town material. Whoa. Absolutely. Travels down your leg, usually to your foot, your ankle region.
Because they can sense gravity.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's also, this is part of their life cycle. I mean, you know, their evolution too. A blister will start to form on your foot, a little cyst or blister, and eventually it'll burst open. The worm will sort of stick her head out like, hey, world, I'm here. And the way that this works for the worm is that if you're standing in water at this point again, the worm is releasing new larvae back into the water supply. And the larvae get eaten by water fleas, and then the cycle continues. All right. So, but here's where it just absolutely horrifying. When the worm, like, pokes its head out of your body, there's really only one basic treatment, and this treatment has been this way for hundreds, if not thousands of years. It goes back to ancient Egypt, even. The same treatment was you grab the head of the worm, You wrap it around a stick and you slowly twist it and pull it out of your body. On the quick side, you could maybe get it out in, you know, a couple hours or something like that. But on the long side, this could take weeks or months to get.
It's that long?
It's that long. It can eat many, many, many inches, even feet long when they grow and are fully fertilized. They're really disgusting to see. And you got to do it slowly and carefully. So it's, you might do like a turn a day and just leave it there and another turn the next day. And meanwhile, you've got this worm that's half in your body, half outside your body.
Does it hurt?
Oh, it hurts like crazy. I want to refer you back to the Latin name, Karen. Affliction with little dragons. People have described the sensation of it, being pulled out as if it's just on fire. Like somebody's holding a hot poker to your foot the entire time that you're pulling this thing out. It's just absolutely, absolutely gruesome.
You can't drink something or eat medicine and have that kill the worm
from the inside.
In your body.
Nope.
You got to get it out.
Well, it's coming out of your foot. So yeah. It must not have left your gut.
This is sort of the good and the bad of dealing with guinea worms is that, so they focus the efforts on prevention, really. Like if you can just cut off the beginning of the life cycle, just get people drinking clean water, just filtered water is as simple as that. They say that they've gotten it down to only 4 countries in Africa now are the only places that it's still prevalent. They've made amazing progress on it. Just without medicine is the good part. I mean, like you don't need to get out and get vaccines to people. You don't need to
clean water.
Nets, filters, whatever you can do, access to clean water. And so they're saying that this might be the first parasitic disease to be eradicated.
Wow.
That is their hope. And I thought that was pretty cool.
Wow.
Yeah.
First ever.
The first parasitic disease to be eradicated, at least without the use of medicine or anything like
Got
that.
It.
Yeah. Not just that it dies off. Isn't that crazy?
Wow.
Yeah. So there's
a little bit of
a happy ending there.
No, I think it's super happy.
That is a happy ending.
Yeah.
That's a happy note to end our show, our episode about creepy crawlies. I think it's actually very good news. Thank you guys for joining me. And thanks to you guys, listeners, for listening in. Hope you learn a lot about things, bugs in your ear, Stephen King, cane toads, and snails, and thank Jimmy Carter.
Yes. Yeah.
You can find us on iTunes, on Stitcher, on SoundCloud, and also on our website, goodjobbrain.com, and check out our sponsor at bonobos.com, and we'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
All quiz.
Bye.
Bye.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.